Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 290. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Kaplan, Sir Michael.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. Find me at turnersparks on Instagram. I'm putting up new stand-up comedy videos every single week. And now I'm doing Ye's reaction to my videos, Cap. How about that?
That's so, the most genius thing you've ever come up with. Why make new material when you could take old material and just have your wife react to it?
It's really great. It doubles the life of the
it's
material.
It's like when you animate, you're going to animate it next, right? You're going to take the same clip and have it animated. And
just, oh my gosh. Well, and then we got to get Myrna's reaction. Maybe Ben and Natalie, Myrna's my niece and nephew.
Person on the street's reaction.
Yeah.
Pancakes, my dog's reaction.
Sure. Just well, everybody. Two barks means she likes it.
Just keep it's gonna be
great.
It, yeah.
So anyway, it's a great way to blast out your material. You can find me all those places. Plus, I'll be in Australia for 2 weeks, headlining the Sydney Comedy Store in late January, early February. And you can find Kaplan at Kaplan America on all social media platforms, Kaplan NYC for all your real estate needs. Is that worldwide, Cap?
I can give advice to you if worldwide. I can represent you in New York. I'm licensed to practice real estate in the state of New York. So, okay, but I can refer you to somebody in the others, and I get a referral fee. So, you know, I will do that. So, anywhere in North America. No, worldwide.
A worldwide referral fee.
Keller Williams has offices everywhere. So, lots of places. So, yes.
Kaplan NYC for that. Kaplan, on the podcast today, we're doing a special episode. Sometimes, you know, what we have with our friends, with our comedy community, is more interesting than anything that's going on in the news.
Yeah, there's nothing going on in the news these days. It's boring. So
nothing as interesting as this.
Nothing's happening.
So we have our old friend Muhammad Magdi on the show. He's coming up in just a minute. He's going to tell us about how he escaped the Arab Spring in 2012. I think. I don't actually know. All I know is that he showed up in Shanghai. Maybe 2000.
He showed up one day.
I come into the comedy club, the Kung Fu Comedy Club in Shanghai, and there's this Egyptian guy on stage just yelling at people. And I said to Andy, what is cap? And he said, you are dogs, you are pigs, you are scum. And I go, is this comedy? And Andy's like, I'm not sure, but it's open mic. They can do whatever they want. And then it turns out it's Muhammad. I find out later, and he's escaped the Arab Spring. But I know I never got the full story on how he escaped. So we're going to get into that. That'll be the entire episode today. It's going to be pretty interesting. Cap, but before that, patreon.com/lostinamerica. We need people are jumping on the bandwagon left and right. Yeah. Imar joined last week. We had one new subscriber, but we lost two people.
The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away.
Exactly.
That's not good. If we get 2-1, that's good. If we get 1-1, that's okay. But we cannot have losing two when we get one. That's not gonna, that's a good business model.
For every one we gain, we lose two. That's not a way to make a living.
We're not going to be. Yeah, the lights are going to go off pretty soon around here.
Your dog Pancakes Kaplan's going to lose her health insurance. Mm.
Oh no.
She already wears diapers and she has a walker. She can't walk. And these people want to take Eric Wolf, who unsubscribed, wants to take her walker away. Is that
essentially a dog killer? Yes. We're if you unsubscribe from this podcast from Patreon,
we name and shame.
You don't want Pancakes Kaplan to live to be able to walk.
Point is, we're in the final stages of recording of editing the TV show we filmed in El Salvador six months ago. It's early in the morning out here. We filmed it in July. We're on the last stage of that. We're putting in the voiceover tomorrow for that. How about that? And then all this stuff, we're going to have a watch party very soon with all of our Patreon subscribers. Eric Wolf, not invited, but everybody else. And Imar is invited, although I think over the life of it, Eric's given us more money. So maybe we'll
doesn't matter. It's we wait. It's at the end. You got to get in now. This is why it's a good time.
What have you
in.
Done for me lately?
We don't remember anybody who gave us money last year.
That's a good point. So go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. Not only are you getting us doing this show, our Live from the Bunker show, but it's just a way to support us. We're growing. We're building. We're going to be huge stars one day. You're going to want to say you knew us when. You're going to want to get invited to the cocktail party, you know?
When we are big stars, when our show is a huge hit on Netflix or wherever it's going to be a huge hit, will we send autographs to the people who are her patrons? Will we send them something? Well, we'll send them
we'll autograph their DVD.
The DVD, yes. Bring me the bootleg DVD.
Of the extras or the director's commentary. How about that?
Yes,
that's we a good will remember deal. You. All right, Kaplan, on the show today, we have Muhammad Magdi talking about the Arab Spring, but I thought the way we should start this is let's do a recap for the audience of the Arab Spring.
Because our audience are a bunch of dummies. They don't read the papers. They don't even know what even happened.
They don't know anything. So what do you know? Cap, you go first. What do you know?
What do I know?
Or should I begin?
No. Well, I know, about a decade ago, I believe it's 2011 or so, around those parts, 2010, 11, there was a protest began in Tunisia, I think was the first one.
Tunisia is where it was. You're right.
Yeah. And it went all a spread. You know, it was like the hot, it was all the rage. Was it in the spring? I don't remember if it was actually in the spring, but it was called the Arab Spring and everybody started copying. Libya fell, Gaddafi finally fell. Oh no, is that after? Whatever. Libya went down, Egypt, they protested all over. And Egypt was one of the success stories at first, we thought, because they got rid of Mubarak, who had been in power for, I don't know, 30 years, 20, I'm not sure exactly how, since Sadat was killed. I don't remember how many years, a long time. And
you didn't study that hard, did you?
I didn't study at all. I know the area a little bit. Come on.
You're and, blowhard. You know this. Stuff.
I'm blowharding. I know he was in power. That's why we're doing a refresher here. So he and then they elected the Muslim Brotherhood. That part I you didn't know. I don't think you picked that up. When you have democracy in the Middle East, sometimes you get bad results, not the best results that we want. So we want democracy, but we want it, you know, with limits. So they elected the Muslim Brotherhood. And I know that Muslim didn't last very long. I think it's like Egypt's version of it's a terrorist organization, I believe, or like,
no good.
Muhammad, correct me on that. He might disagree, but they're not the best.
Is it ISIS for Egypt?
Not ISIS. No, no. They're much more old school. They've been around for a long time. So
Al-Qaeda.
I think you've been older school than them, but they've been around since I don't know. But so they didn't last very long, though. I don't remember if we had something to do with it. We'll find out. But they didn't last very long. And now they have a new guy who I think is becoming like another dictator. That's my read on the situation. They're arresting journalists again. And
that's most of it. The only thing I want to sneak in here is I was in China at the time. And I remember specifically that this was the first, the way it spread, it was the first uprising to spread via social media. 2010, 11, 12 in that range. Twitter. And Twitter, Facebook, all this kind of thing. Previously, Twitter had just been people going on like, oh, I had a lunch was great today. No one knew what to talk about on Twitter.
Right. And my coffee, they didn't put the cream in it. LOL.
Yeah. You're complaining just at Starbucks, not you're terrible, not my order, you know.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, these Arab people started organizing a revolution on Twitter. And we went, whoa, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, we didn't think of that.
And I was in Chinatown. I remember this specifically because of these Arab people, China got rid of Twitter, they canceled all social media in China. They outlawed
We didn't think
it.
Of that. We didn't realize
because they said, "Well, oops, you know, that's what could happen there could happen anywhere." So that's why I got my internet taken away by people like Muhammad and those things.
Oh my God, it's his fault. So you couldn't.
I blame him. Squarely.
We didn't hear from you for weeks on email because of that.
Exactly. Anyway, Muhammad,
you were the real casualty.
I was the real casualty. Exactly. That's the point. It's all about me. Muhammad Magdi, stand-up comedian, now based in tours around the world, now based in Hong Kong. Welcome to the show. How did we do on that recap?
Pretty okay, I would say. You guys got the basics right.
That's what we did.
Almost all the details are wrong, but the structure is there. The framework is there.
Good.
So, yeah.
Hey, well, I was right. Mubarak was in power since 1981, by the way. So there you go.
We have something to work with.
Okay, so that's 40 years. Cap, you said 30, but that's 40. Okay. Quick math.
I can't do math.
It's not your fault. Anyway, Muhammad, so you were... what year did you come to Shanghai? Let's start there.
I actually came... I had already been in China for a year and a half before I moved to Shanghai.
Okay.
I moved to Shanghai in 2012. I moved to Shanghai in 2013, summer 2013. I had moved to China already early 2012. And I was teaching English in Dongbei, which is northeast China.
Yeah, the fun part.
Yeah, it's basically close to the border of North Korea.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where Turner goes skiing, right?
I did go skiing up there. Yeah, they have great mountains. It is a little cold. So you're...
The only tourists who go there are white people and Japanese businessmen. It's great.
Oh, yeah. It's a border town, if you know what I mean, for the Japanese businessmen. Yeah. Oh.
Also, before we continue on with my life story, I would like to just complain for 1 minute.
The floor is yours.
Turner Sparks Double Happiness. What a scam.
What?
Oh, my God.
He's holding the CD up for our video.
I'm holding the CD, which is part of the scam because you sent me a CD. I don't have anything to play in.
You ordered it. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to be, a mind reader?
I ordered it.
Why did you order a CD?
I genuinely thought you're going to send me a CD with like a little USB stick so I can have the CD as like, you know, like memory, but then I can actually listen to the album.
What? No, I don't know.
I don't have anything to play it in.
You did.
It's not a scam. There's nowhere on it does it say it comes with a USB.
No.
Did you think it came with a CD player?
No, the scam is not the fact that it's a CD. The scam is that after I spent like half an hour trying to ask my friends to give me a CD player so I can listen to the album, I just went on Spotify and it's fucking right there.
Oh, yeah, but it's not autographed.
Yeah, but that doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah, Spotify gives me zero. For anyone listening, stop telling me you listen on Spotify. It's 0.00%.
Eric Wolf, I have it on good authority. Eric Wolf, listen to your album on Spotify.
It's ridiculous.
But this is the only way I can listen to your album is on Spotify. You understand? Even though I pay for the CD.
Feel good that you're helping out an artist trying to improve the world.
You know what? Have the CD framed. It's going to be worth something one day. This TV show is going to be big. Just put it in a frame right now.
How about this?
I have a signed copy. Yeah, I'm very happy that I have it.
This is your punishment for taking away my internet in 2011.
Okay. The scam is your business. Is you doing business. But the real album is actually, when I did listen to it on Spotify, it's pretty fucking good.
Came around.
Thank you.
Well done.
But pretty fucking good.
But you do terrible business and you scam people. Anyway,
it's better on CD, the sound quality.
I clearly do good business. I mean, your money's in my pocket so who's the bad businessman?
You should tell people when they order a CD that they need a CD player to listen to the CD.
That's insanity. Should I tell people at a restaurant? Should I tell people when they order a cheeseburger, they need a stomach to digest it?
Also, I know you guys in the US are like pretty backwards, but like, why do you even have CDs still?
Because people buy, because you have to make a living.
There's somebody for him to sign. He can't autograph a USB drive.
Yeah, what am I supposed to autograph your laptop when you listen on Spotify?
Send me something digital.
All right, whatever. Digital,
a lot of hate mail to start the show off.
Let's move. Anyway, moving on. two. Why were you? I'm not gonna defend the CD industry to start my show. Just you bought it. You get what you get. And you don't throw a fit. That's the way it works.
Yeah, well, you get it. And you don't. Yeah,
fine.
So
the Mohammed, product is good. It's just the packaging is bad.
Thank you. I'll accept.
Blurb that.
Yeah, that's going on my next poster. The product's good, but the packaging's bad. All right. So you're born in Egypt, grow up in Egypt, spend your whole life in Egypt. And then in 2010, Tunisia flips, right?
Right.
And then where are you at this point?
I'm in Egypt. So what happens in Tunisia is that they had protests just out of nowhere, right? And we, like my generation, I'm 33 years old now. At the time, I was like early 20s. And my generation and everywhere pretty much in the Middle East has always grown up with the one president, the one dictator. That's the guy. He never goes away. He never dies. Everyone dies. Your dad, your grandpa, and your brothers and your sister, everyone dies. That guy is there. It's Gaddafi. It's Mubarak. It's Zine Edine Ben Ali in Tunisia. That guy's just there. And then all of a sudden, we hear about some protests in Tunisia, which is whatever. You have protests, who cares? But then like 2 weeks later, Zine Edine Ben Ali, who has been there for, I think at the time, over 30 years, flees the country. And we're like, wait a second.
It can work.
That's new. Exactly. And that was very interesting because we're like, what happened? So everyone started paying attention. And what happened, it was such as like a small spark that like sparked something much bigger. What happened is that some street vendor had a fight with a police woman. And you got to understand in the Arab culture, like a woman slapping you or even insulting you is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. Like that is like, that is very, like that's more insulting than a man doing that, right? Because that's like, you know,
it's embarrassing.
What's the right word? Emasculates you. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't have this women police officer slapping you around.
Yeah, actually, I did end up going to Tunisia like a year later, and I asked my friends there about the real story, not like the feel-good story. And the real story is that he actually insulted her really badly first. And that's a story you don't hear anywhere, but they know. What happened is that he was like illegally like selling some bullshit on the street, and she told him to move away because it's illegal. And then she knocked over his scale. And then he said something along the lines of, oh, if you tip over my scale, I'm going to use your boobs to weigh my tomatoes or whatever the fuck. So is that something inappropriate and sexual?
Classic insult.
So she slapped him.
Yeah, not a bad line.
Exactly.
She slapped him. He's free speech.
Yeah. And he was so insulted. It's like, how can a woman slap me? And somehow, probably with a little bit of help, outside help is the story that they try to say, that somehow ended up being such a big protest in front of the police like headquarter. And then that guy, because he couldn't get his like anyone to listen to him, he set himself on fire and he died.
Whoa. Because he got slapped by a woman.
Yeah. Correct.
Can I just pause right here and say that if this story would have been wide known, that the whole reason why he was so upset because it was a woman who slapped him, 80% of Americans would have been in favor of the dictator.
That's right. Yeah. So it's very interesting actually knowing, obviously in Egypt, I lived through I had firsthand experience, but even in Tunisia, knowing the full story, it's very interesting to see the final product, like what you guys or what everyone in the world, what version of the story becomes mainstream. And what like just kind of like either skip over or you just kind of conveniently don't mention, right?
Yeah, I've never heard that part of the story.
I've never heard her story.
I've heard the story of there was the vendor and the police officer. I never heard it was a woman, and I never heard he was so offended because it specifically was a woman.
She's going to be a feminist hero one
also
day.
You will never hear the fact that he actually started it. Like he actually insulted and said something really bad first.
He's a misogynist. Yeah.
He's definitely a misogynist. And it's funny because the young people, even the people who are for the protest in Tunisia, people who are like in favor of Zine Edine Ben Ali leaving and everything, they acknowledge that guy is a piece of shit.
Mm. Yeah.
Like they acknowledge the end result is good, but he's still a piece of shit.
I mean, everybody's got issues.
Break a few eggs, I guess, right?
Yeah. You know?
That's right. So anyway, so that's what happened in Tunisia. And then their president left and people in Egypt was like, wait a second, they leave? And then, but it wasn't like, oh, let's just copy them. It's actually happened that around the same time, and a similar incident in Egypt happened. And that was the end of 2010, when there's this kid called Khaled Said in a city called Alexandria. It's by the, you guys know Alexandria, like by the Mediterranean. Yeah. So Khaled Said, he was like, yeah, built by Alexander the Great. And he was like maybe early 20s or something. And he had a fight with a police officer. Again, this is a common thread because in countries, Arab countries, police officers have all the power and they just beat the fuck out of people if they want to. And it's very common that like young people just get in fights with police officers. So this one, the police officer was kind of like asking the kid, trying to ID the kid who was like at an internet cafe. And the kid kind of just talked back and the officer didn't know the way, didn't like the way the kid talked back. So he just started beating him up. And the kid died. Like he beat him up so bad that the kid died. Just and then, actually, that incident happens almost every day in Egypt, at least at the time. What got attention is kind of like the timing was really bad for them because it was the Tunisia protest, and the internet and Facebook was taking hold. Everyone was on Facebook. What happened is that the autopsy photo leaked on Facebook. And the autopsy photo of his face, of his face was just like, it didn't look good. It looked like someone beat him up. And that wasn't the final straw. The final straw was the official report, official autopsy report said that he died choking on a bag of weed.
Oh my God.
Oh, okay.
Choking on a bag of weed.
That's when people went, yeah. So they tried to be like, of course. So their narrative, their official narrative was, the police officer tried to stop the kid because he had weed on him and the kid tried to swallow the bag of weed and he died choking. But the photo is there and his family had the photos. Like the photos was not Photoshopped. It was like a photo of like some guy with like broken teeth and his face was fucked. And that's when people were like, all right, that's it. We're going on the street. So this other guy who actually a little bit of conspiracy used to work for Google. He was like the regional manager for Google at the time in Egypt. He started a Facebook page called Kulina Khaled Said, which is where all Khaled Said, where all that kid would die.
What's that again?
The conspiracy people, we are all Khaled Said, where all that guy
kid would die. Yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah, so that's the name of the group that actually started the protest in Egypt, is where all Khaled Said. And if you want to go into CIA conspiracy and all this stuff, it is actually pretty plausible because it was started by literally the head of Google at the time in Egypt. You can, you know, you can be like, a little iffy.
Google's the new CIA. That's where they...
Correct. But when he started the page, it gained traction very quickly. And he chose the date 25th of January, 2011. The reason is 25th of January is actually the National Police Day. It's a national holiday in Egypt. And it's a police day. So he said, we're going to go into Tahrir Square, which is the main square in Cairo, to protest police brutality on their day.
Well, it's a day that honored... It was a day that honored police? Like a...
Correct. Like it's a day to honor, the day to honor the police, and it's a national holiday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is going to be January 25th, 2011, is the day in Egypt the protests start. So at this point, where are you?
I am in Egypt. I was working for Vodafone at the time, which is a British telecommunication company, a big multinational company. And I was just at work. I was not politically active. I was kind of following the news, but I wouldn't think of going on that day just because first of all, I was a little afraid. And second, I'm like, I don't think it's going to amount to anything, right?
But you're out of college. Like, you're working at a job. You're just like...
Correct. I graduated university the same year, 2010. These protests are January 2011. So I had started working as soon as graduated, summer 2010. So the protests happened, and actually they handled it, the police and the government handled it so badly that they are directly responsible for the protests going out of control. Mm-hmm. Because the protests on 25th of January actually were pretty small. You only remember the photos for like the millions of people in Tahrir Square. That's later in the month. The protest on 25th of January is very, very small, but they wanted to suppress it so quickly that they just sent so much, like so many police officers and so much anti-riot guys and gear and anti-riot gear that they just agitated people. So people were just like, instead of just standing there, because the Facebook page was saying, hey, you just stand in the Tahrir Square and just, you know, protest peacefully.
Yeah.
But there was almost as many police officers as the protesters, which was just like a few thousand people. But they sent so many police officers because they were freaked out. Right. And that actually caused people to get agitated, and they started having, like, you know, scuffles with the police. And then eventually the police started throwing tear gas at them, and just the thing, the situation went out of control.
This is all on the first day. They're throwing tear gas day one.
That's all on the first day.
Okay.
Correct.
That's probably
had there been protests before, there anything like that before? Or had it been?
I have not. You're not going to like the answer, Kaplan, but I did
against Israel. On a
protest. Yeah, exactly.
when there was the peace deal, you mean, or when was that the?
No. That was when I was like in high school. A couple of times, you know, every couple of years, there's always a fucking Gaza war, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But in that situation, they're just protesting that. Right.
Yeah, it's like a student protest, right?
The government doesn't get that. The government's not that upset by it, right? They're just like, they're a little annoyed, but they're not. Yeah. Right.
It's actually kind of funny you say that, because it depends when, right? Because in 2008, it was used kind of almost like a release valve, right?
Right.
To make us look like there is some freedom of people for people to protest. But right now, literally, if you go on the street as an Egyptian citizen, and I'm not exaggerating, in 2022, as an Egyptian citizen, if you stand in Tahrir Square and hold a Free Palestine sign, you will get arrested.
Really? That's great. Yeah. Because I always thought, I guess it depends on the country, right? Because I always feel like there's in some countries, it's like, exactly, it's a good release valve so they don't get mad about, you know, the actual government. That's what we're doing.
Correct.
Get mad
but
at
it depends
Israel.
When. But, right now, they can't risk upsetting Israel. So, right. I mean, well, this is also not like an example that I'm using hypothetically. There have been cases when, you know, again, whenever there is a Gaza thing or whatever, there have been cases where people started protesting and holding Palestinian flags, and the government's like, nah, not anymore.
Right. So it's like, you never know. Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it's like, nope, you're going to jail.
Yeah. Correct. Wow.
Crazy. So... And then
day one.
Yeah, that was my only experience with protests. That was like 2000. I think it was 2008. I got one of the Gaza wars, and it was like, you know, a little protest after school. No one gets hurt. And that, so I did. I was not that politically active. So I started going, I think the day after, from my memory, maybe 26, because people at work, everyone was like, oh, let's just go see what happens. Like, we're not actually going to go protest. We're curious, because the TV was not, it's interesting. At the time, we had two sources. One is the government, the national TV, and then the other side is Al Jazeera. And later you realize neither of them is telling the truth. It's pretty funny, because Al Jazeera was in the middle of the protest showing you as if like everyone in Egypt is in that square. So they're showing, oh my God, it's millions of people. You know, they're having to fight for freedom and stuff. And then the national TV is literally shown pointing. So Tahrir Square, I don't know if you can see it on Google Map or something. There is a square in the middle, and there's like a couple of bridges leading to the square. And the national TV is showing the camera, showing the bridge that is leading to Tahrir Square, completely empty, and saying there is no one there.
Okay. And it's so funny, the difference between like Al Jazeera's, it's essentially trying to get viewers. Their goal is to make money, as is like US media. And so that is, you want to hype whatever it is, hype it up as much as possible to make it seem more extreme, so more people will watch.
And it's also a Qatari funded channel. And Qatar was at the time cozying up to the Muslim Brotherhood. So it was their in their interest to try to actually make this work, because the only organized political group, aside from the government, aside from Mubarak and his party, are the Muslim Brotherhood. And they were right. They actually made a bet and they won, because they backed the protest, hoping that Mubarak would leave and the Muslim Brotherhood, as the only organized party, would take over. And that's exactly what happened. So actually Al Jazeera is directly responsible, one of the parties responsible for the protest succeeding.
Wow. And the government couldn't, at this point, keep going.
So a lot of people, the numbers looked bigger because there was a lot of people like me who were curious about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I say that because I spoke to people when I was there. A lot of people were just kind of standing on the sidelines, just kind of like, huh, this is interesting. We've never seen that before. Look, the police is kind of scared, right? Because the police started to see the numbers and they didn't know what to do. And people started feeling a little bit more brave. So they started setting up tents in the middle of the square. The chants start. It's also kind of funny because on the 25th of January, the chants were actually not down with the regime. The chants with police reforms and no to police brutality. It was not down with the regime or Mubarak out. But the ceiling of the demands kept getting higher and higher because people started to realize that we can actually achieve something here. Mm-hmm. And I think on the 26th, I don't remember exactly, 26th or 27th, Mubarak started giving his first speech. And it was something along the lines of, I was not intending to run another. This is a guy who's been in power for 30 years, never had fair elections. And he's like, oh, by the way, this was going to be my last run. I don't know what you guys are mad about.
I was going to retire, guys.
I was going to retire anyway. If you guys
I would write my memoirs. Going to go.
Exactly.
This is like day two of the protest.
Day two or day three, something like this. Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone go home. I swear I'll be out, but I just got to finish things up. I got to train my successor. You know, I can't just leave things.
Yeah. And that actually got people more angry because people felt that he's underestimating their intelligence. Like, dude, you've been there for fucking 30 years. Really, this is the day? And then they started chatting down with Mubarak. And they're like, all right, you're out. You're done.
Yeah, you're done now. You're
gonna leave anyway.
And that was around 28 is actually pretty much the focal like point of the protest. Like, that's the main day. Because 28th is the day that there was over a million people in the square. It got really violent.
A million? 1 million people in the square?
Yeah, well over a million people. I was there, actually. And that's when started getting really fucking hectic. Because it got really violent. They started shooting, like, so they had snipers on top of the buildings in Tahrir Square. And you just see people getting shot. Like, you would see people. Did you ever watch The Walking Dead?
I've never seen it.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so
what you mean?
Yeah, you've watched zombie movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. People getting picked off. That's exactly it.
Did you know anyone who was shot? Or?
Not directly, but I've seen it.
Wait. So you're there on day two. You're on there on January 26th, but you're as like a casual observer. You're just like, well, curious. What's going on? What is this?
Correct.
And then what made you go back the next day and the next day?
What made me go back is that I actually believed for the first time that my existence makes a difference.
Okay.
Like, me being there can achieve something. You grow up in countries like Egypt or Tunisia or whatever, and you're just a number. You don't have any power to change anything in your, maybe direct surroundings. Sure, you can change your job or whatever. But if you're unhappy with the system, there's nothing you can do about it. You just deal with the hand you were dealt. And for the first time that day, that feeling changed. And I would speak for almost everyone, at least in my generation, who had similar feeling. When I said earlier about like how the presidents stay there for life, I was not joking.
Right.
That is a genuine belief that we had that Gaddafi is just there forever. Gaddafi's Gaddafi.
Yeah.
What is going to happen to him? Nothing. Because I was born in 1989. Gaddafi was there. Mubarak was there. Zain al-Abidin Bin Ali was there. All of these guys were there. It's like, they don't die.
No, they have great healthcare.
For the first time, they do have great healthcare.
They seem to live forever.
On that point, it's kind of funny because healthcare in these countries is so bad. And these guys, whenever something happens to them, they fly to Germany to get healthcare. They never go, no matter how nice the private hospitals in Egypt are, they don't trust them. And it's not just because the level of the healthcare is not good. They don't trust the doctors themselves because they know they're not popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
wow. So I'd always thought of it like in a country like that or other countries where we've lived, it's like the weather. It's like, complaining about the weather. You can complain about it, but you have no ability to change it. It just is.
Correct.
That's how I describe complaining about the government. Like, people would always ask me, why in other countries, why aren't they protesting? I'm like, well, first of all, you can't do anything. It's like there is a sense of hopelessness.
I mean, to it. Well, most of these leaders have been in power. Yeah, they were in power from the 70s, Gaddafi, right? And
So Mubarak took over in 1979. Mubarak was a president 10 years before I was, or maybe 81, like years before I was born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
right.
When you decide to go
There was another like side issue that one of the things that people were really mad about is that the fact that Mubarak, there was talks that even after he leaves, which is in forever, his son might take over.
Right.
So that was one of the reasons those people were very mad. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's never ending. All right, I want to get more of this story. We do have to take a break, but when I come back, we're going to keep diving into this. Kaplan, we're part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. That is me. Really? That is you. That is Lost in America. That is also The Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. And that is also the Majoring in Everything podcast with Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy. You can find it all. WorldSmartestPodcastNetwork.com. Subscribe to all these shows. Please leave us a review on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to us on, even if it's Spotify. Yes. I don't even think you can review people on Spotify. I don't know.
I don't. Did you have any CD reviews? Did anyone review your CD on Spotify?
Not on Spotify. I'm probably going to get one from Muhammad that's just complaining that I don't have a USB drive or whatever it is. I don't know. USB. I mean, what? Speaking of living in the 80s, Jesus Christ, who uses a USB drive anymore? Anyway, that's all. WorldSmartestPodcastNetwork.com. And now, Kaplan, it might be a word from us at this point. I believe, let's say, and now a word from us. A
word from us.
All right, we're back.
Thank you, us.
Thank you, sponsors or us, whatever you heard. In that Muhammad. All right. So you went back because you thought you could change. You thought that change could be happening for the first time in your life. And was there a sense of risk in this? Like, if I'm part of this group, if I'm seen, I could go to jail or are you, is that along in your head as well? Or when it's a million people, are you thinking, I mean, like, who cares?
It's a bit complicated, but also I'm very, like, I think as I get older, my ADD gets worse. So I need to tell you guys this before I forget.
Yeah.
There is rating on Spotify for podcasts.
Oh,
and you guys have no rating yet.
We have no
rating. So you guys should encourage people. Yeah, yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Well, I'm about to leave like 2 stars, but you guys should tell other people to leave 5 stars.
No. Yeah, everybody, Muhammad, this is the rule. Say whatever you want about us, no matter how much you hate us, but just make it 5 stars.
Yeah, that's, you can rip rule. This. Actually, I'm a dirty Zionist, but give me 5 stars.
Okay, you're welcome, because I'm the only one who left rating, and now it's a 5-star rating.
Thank you.
Look at that.
So all of our reviewers who've already left iTunes reviews, like Tug just left one last week. Thank you very much, but that's not good enough. We need you guys now to go to Spotify and leave a review.
Spotify only allows a star rating without comments.
Oh, it's even easier. 5 stars. No excuses.
Yeah. Comments. Yeah. Good. Yeah. We don't want comments. We're like Mubarak. We don't want comments. We don't want feedback.
Too dangerous. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
let's shoot you
from a rooftop. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. You were asking about the element of risk, right? Like if I was worried or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Actually, not particularly for, I think you feel empowered by the sheer number of people.
Okay.
So you actually start kind of running the numbers in your head. Like, you do hear about casualties, and I literally saw people like kind of like just a little bit further back kind of get picked off. And then obviously everyone kind of like runs to them and try to help them or whatever. But then you also think, I'm in a maybe 5 square kilometer space, and there's about 300,000 people. What are the odds?
Oh my gosh.
Especially when 300,000.
When police officers are shooting from the rooftop with impunity, they're not going to go to jail for this. They're not going to be in trouble for this. No one's running up to stop them.
None of them went to jail.
Yeah. And it's not even like at least at our,
like,
at least at our shooters in America, they're illegal. Like, the police are trying to stop them at some point. But would you, so even when that's happening, when you're seeing people get picked up, you're still going, eh, it's not going to hit me.
I'm running the numbers in my head. Yeah. What are the chances?
Yeah. Yeah. I studied accounting. I'm actually a numbers guy, even though I don't like to
analytics
work in a bank or whatever. But like, yeah, my brain can run numbers pretty quick.
Advanced analytics.
And I just like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, you know what? The probability is pretty low. Actually,
it's just like crossing the street. Yeah.
And when you're in the, when you're in the square and people are just getting picked off left and right, can you run away or are you packed in like a concert?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there is a system. So actually we developed, not me, like we obviously there's different groups and whatever. So there was what is called like a makeshift clinic. That's the word, the makeshift hospital. So we actually have the doctors on one side with like their little makeshift clinic. And then you have the guys on the motorbike, and the motorbike guys pick up the people who are wounded or shot, and they everyone make way for them, like Moses with the Red Sea, and ride straight to the clinic. And it's actually quite fascinating. Shout out Moses, yeah. And it's quite fascinating to see, because there are videos out there showing you, like aerial videos, showing you how fast people make way for the motorbikes. And it's literally like, it's two guys on the motorbike. One is riding, one is in the back, and the wounded person is in the middle. So they're like, you know, like balanced.
And are the police trying to now shoot the doctors and the motorbike people?
They would go and harass them. Yeah. And there are instances of police. I mean, the snipers thing, I also don't want you to think it's a Hollywood movie. They're not shooting all the time.
Right.
But it did happen many times. So they're not exactly trying to kill everybody. They're trying to scare people off. So every now and then you would hear one shot and one person.
Like, would there be warning shots? Like they would start shooting the air or anything?
Well, the warning shots are the tear gas, right? Which is in and of itself kind of worse than getting shot, to be honest. The tear gas is fucking horrible.
Yeah, what is that? We were talking about that with Iran like recently. Like, I hear, what is that like to experience tear gas?
It's actually, we found out later that they're not even using good tear gas. They're using expired one.
Oh, GMOs.
Expired.
Yeah. Does
that work not as well for that?
Yeah,
my wife would not put up with expired. She throws out yogurt that hasn't even gone expired yet. She says it might be expired.
Yeah, so you learn
that.
You learn how to, because the tear gas is very acidic. So you try to, I don't know if it's actually acidic or the other one. My chemistry is terrible. But anyway, it has something that you fix with vinegar or Coca-Cola or something that does have high acidity. So I think tear gas is the other one, whatever it is.
It's alkaline, like,
is that the name? I don't know. Yeah, something like that, whatever. But it burns your eyes really, really bad. And you very quickly can faint. So you soak a towel, and as I said, like Coca-Cola or vinegar, and you put it on your face and you kind of try
to cover your, so it bounces it out. That's genius.
Yeah, correct.
So you do that, and yeah, do you stand with, I would have taken my like tallest buddy to come with me. So, you know, just in case. There's a chance of getting hit by the sniper.
He gets shot.
Yeah.
I would stay real close. Exactly. Yeah. A big short of. We got an advantage.
Actually, one of the main strategies you do is that you're never alone, because also you got to understand that these guys are all around the square. So as soon as you split off from the group a bit, you're taken like right away. Mm. So the strength is really in the numbers. You just all stay together.
And
And even when you try to go home or whatever, you also don't, because they follow you. So you also don't want to go home alone.
They follow you home.
Yeah.
Wow. And that they just ran because there's a million people.
This is the first time they're scared of people, right? So they know that if they try to follow me and I have 15 people next to me, they're going to be scared. But if I'm by myself, they can just take me.
And what are the gun laws? Like, I assume no one's allowed. No one has a gun, right? No citizens, like regular civilians.
No citizen has a gun. No. And you got to have it if you're like a fucking millionaire who, you know, has that crazy property or whatever, but you got to apply for a special license and the Secret Service, not Secret Service, whatever, the national security permission.
Yeah. Okay. And so then on January 28th, the internet got cut 3 days in, right?
Correct. That, which again speaks to their stupidity and their naivety, because what happened is that they cut off the internet because they realized that people were communicating through, you know, the internet, through like Facebook Messenger or whatever. They're like, oh, if we cut off the internet, they're not going to be able to communicate. And they actually not just cut off the internet, they cut off the network itself from around the, almost the entire capital, like that central area. So you also don't have 3G. You can't call people, you can't text people. You have no cell service. What that did, though, is that almost everybody who is watching from home now can't talk to their relatives or their friends in the square, so they went to find them.
So many people.
I would actually argue that there is maybe 50% of the size of the protest when it was at its peak was because of the internet being cut off. Because so many people just went either to look for their children,
right,
or because they were getting the news from people writing on Twitter or whatever. Now they're not getting news, so they want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
The old-fashioned way.
Exactly, the old-fashioned way. And because of that, that actually, that day overwhelmed the police finally. Because until then, I think they thought they had a chance. There was a lot of back and forth. They killed some people, they arrest some people, and they just think at some point people will get tired. People did not get tired. The strength was in the numbers. When there was more people, people were like, oh, fuck it. Let's not go to work. Let's not do anything. We're just going to hang out here until Mubarak leaves. And it became kind of standoffish. And this is when they started playing politics, because as I said, in the beginning, it was like, oh, this is my last term. And people were like, nah, we don't think so. And then we believe, and this is kind of the common narrative, is that the army then had to be like, all right, dude, you got to go.
Right. They turned on him.
Yeah.
And who was didn't he also say a couple other things I read? At one point, he said he fired his entire cabinet and replaced him with a new cabinet.
Correct.
It's like when a college Panic football move. Coach fires all their assistants, Kaplan.
Yeah, not the problem. I'm going to get a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, but the coach is still there. It's like, you're the problem, buddy. And then next, he brought in a vice president, which he hadn't had a vice president in 30 years. And now all of a sudden he goes, I'll have a VP. So, and then he didn't get it that he was the issue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. That he didn't get it that he was the issue. And he also didn't get it that it was way too late.
Yeah.
Like he could have actually, people could have kind of been okay with these reforms if they had happened in the beginning. But almost every step, I'm like, even though I was obviously on one side, I like a good story. I like a good narrative. And the narrative was so bad that every story was a disaster. Every move was a disaster for them. And it just speaks for just like bad decisions. Like these people did not make any smart decision throughout the whole protest. So eventually, Mubarak did leave. Actually, that was, so between 28th of January, that's not when he left. That's when things got really ugly. He actually left on 12th of February or 10th of February.
If 10th of February is what my research tells me.
That's exactly it. 10th of February. And so actually, all these days were them trying to get the protesters to run out of steam, basically, through so many different ways. That's when I was camping. That's actually when I went all in. So I basically kind of, I did go to work because my company, which is a big multinational, would have like little buses for us.
They had expect you at work during all this?
because I was working customer service for the UK.
Annoying UK people had to call you and they're like complaining about their phone service.
I want
to change my plan.
I'm trying to return this to Marks and Spencer. Hello. And you're like getting shot at.
I'm like, I'm in I got to go to a square.
Not just that. They're like, oh, my service, my cell service is not great. I'm like, I don't have any cell service. We're going to just cut it.
That's amazing.
I'm busy overthrowing the government. I'll be right with you.
Yeah, just sorry. You're going to be at a longer than usual hold time. I have to go overthrow a government.
Have that in my routine. I think, Turner, you would remember that. Like when years ago, I had a bit about working for Vodafone and people saying that I don't want to speak to A. Mohammed because I would say my real name.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, that's okay. You can hang up and call back and talk to Mustafa or Abdullah or Ahmed or Osama.
They're all good people. They'll help you out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you think Muhammad's the problem?
Yeah.
So I started going. Actually, I stopped going to work at some point because it was just like, it was too far and I wanted to be in the square more. And I started like volunteering and doing stuff like this. And then, yeah, on the 10th of February, he left.
So what kind of volunteering did you get into?
Some general service.
Oh, you can't talk about it.
No, not particularly. I mean, you do a little bit of everything. You kind of like clean up a bit. You help, you know, if someone needs help, you tend to the, like if there's a doctor who wants to you to buy some bandages, whatever,
you run
and you do that. Yeah. You not run errands, stuff like that. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, not everything that is, because this is actually kind of fucked up, but the current government is going backwards in time and making sure that everyone who's involved is caught. So right. Me telling you anything beyond that is a direct like admission of guilt.
Got it.
No,
he was there. Yeah. He was like Jerry Jones at that thing. He was just there to observe. He didn't do anything.
Okay. So I somehow knew we were going to get to that reference. I don't know why I knew it, but so you're there. And then Mubarak goes down on February 10th. He leaves, he gets kicked out of office. The military takes over. And then when did you leave? This is 2011, February 10th. When did you leave Egypt?
I left exactly a year on the, like exactly a year on the dot to February 2012, a year later. Okay.
So what happened between and February, that 1 year, what happened in that 1 year that made you want to leave?
So the military people, actually, I remember that because I was there. The military people showed up to the square and we celebrated them as heroes because they are the ones who protected us and they are the ones who helped convince Mubarak to leave and all.
They turned him eventually. They stopped shooting, right? Is that where you're? Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. They stopped. To be fair to the military guys, they never shot.
Right.
The ones that were, that was the police. Okay. Yes. The military was kind of on the periphery of the square and they're protecting the vital areas because you got to remember Tahrir Square also has the Egyptian Museum, which has like
it's a great museum,
fuck ton of like ancient like artifacts and stuff. Like if something goes wrong, people break into that in the chaos, that's like, you know, crazy amount of monuments that could get lost or stolen. So the military was there protecting the museum and stuff like that. But to be fair to them, in the beginning they were not really involved. They were just like kind of playing neutral. They did later, actually. Just for the record, they did later turn completely on the protesters and turn heel and all of that. So they're not exactly great guys.
But they came in at first. They were heroes.
To be fair at the time. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but I remember that their leaders would come into the square and convince people that it's over. We won. They're like, you guys won. Go home. We're gonna regroup. We're gonna play politics now. You're now. You proved your worth and blah blah blah. And then little did we know that they wanted everyone out of the square so they can shut it down and make sure that no one ever goes there again to protest.
So what did they do? So you can't protest. They closed it off.
They upped the threats bit by bit. In the beginning went like, oh, you know, it's unstable. We don't want to turn it into, which is a running joke until now. A running joke is that if your girlfriend says that you're late for your date, you say, hey, at least we're not in Syria or Iraq. That's a joke.
They don't want to turn it into Syria or Iraq, you would say.
Correct. Yeah. So that started from these times when he says, hey, we're going to play politics now because you know what? They don't want to turn to Syria or Iraq. And the insinuation here is that the army in Syria is killing its own people. So that's the threat, really. It's not like if you, do you want to turn to Syria or do you want to go home?
Meanwhile, he's still in power.
Be the bad guys. Don't make us do what we don't want to do.
Correct. Don't make us be the bad guys.
I don't want to be a snod, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You forced my hands. I got a chemical weapons too.
So actually throughout that year, they also started having curfew for the first time. During the protest itself, there was no curfew. But the military started doing curfew. So it was illegal to be on the streets from like 6 p.m. and then 8 p.m. or whatever. And you got to understand, Cairo is one of the busiest, most bustling cities in the world. You cannot send everyone home. It's just like, that's not how we operate in Cairo. People live on the streets. We drink coffee at 2 a.m. because we have no alcohol, right? People don't drink alcohol. Coffee is our drinking. We drink coffee and smoke shisha at 2 a.m. and show up to the office at 8 a.m. That's just our life.
There's no alcohol live in Egypt?
It's heavily regulated. You can't really just go to a bar. You can go to designated places, fancy hotels and stuff like that. So it's not as common. It's almost different.
So when you got to China, were you just like blown away that you could just drink beer?
No, I had traveled to Europe and stuff before. So I know what other people do.
Do you drink do people drink at home though? Or they don't even, like, how regulated is that?
Egypt is vast majority is Muslim, more than 90% Muslim. So people don't really drink. So it's just really... the 10% is like either Christians who do drink or foreigners.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Anyway,
it's Christians. Those Christians drink a lot, but anyway.
Yeah, Christians drink a lot. Yeah, you know, you gotta drink when you believe in a fake God. What are you gonna do?
Hey, easy.
Hey, we can team up on that one, Mom.
Kaplan, we believe in the same God.
Yeah. No, Kaplan, I believe in the same God. You're the one who was going to hell.
Really? You got the Jesus. Well, you've got the double. You've got
double. Dude, you can't do that. You can't double dip.
Oh, you guys
are only one God.
The Sun. Yeah, we don't believe in the Sun.
In that,
we believe he's a prophet, but yeah.
Well, none of us are going to see the devil. It's all you people. So
My mom and I'll be hanging out.
We believe you're all going to hell.
Wait, Turner, you don't have the devil?
No, we do. We just believe you're the only ones going to it.
Muhammad and I are going to be in hell hanging out being like, God, I can't believe we were arguing about Israel and all that before. It's like, that was
actually fascinating. I just landed on me. I've done this with you guys a couple of times before. It's just landed on me. This is pretty much the first time I speak to a Christian, like a Christian, Muslim, and Jew. It's like a bad sitcom waiting to happen.
I mean, except it's like a sitcom idea.
Normally, they've done tours like this in America, and usually the whole concept is we all get along. Like, this is all us telling each other that everyone else is going to hell except them.
Exactly.
This is the opposite.
We should actually, you guys should invite me to do like a little tour.
It should be called the It's called the Fuck Your Religion Tour. And we all just go out.
We all just rip. It's like roasting another person's religion.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's not going to end well.
No, but we're all like the three of us on stage roasting each other's religion, meaning that we can all say anything we want.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
It's a very good
everyone
story.
Would hate us. Everyone in the audience. So
atheists would love it. Yeah, all the atheists would just go there.
Oh, we know we'd rip them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I gotta rip the atheists.
They're actually the worst. They're worse than everybody.
They are actually the worst. They really are.
They're the most annoying.
Like, how arrogant are you to just deem that there is no God? Like,
so arrogant.
What the fuck?
So arrogant.
You got to play the odds, at least pretend to believe.
And they just inherently think they're smarter than everybody.
Yeah, because you're smarter because you decided something does not exist. You know how retarded that sounds?
All right. Anyway.
Speaking of hell, what happened to Mubarak after he left? Did he just like hang out in the retirement
home? He went to like a 7-star fucking hospital. He had his own resort in Sharm el-Sheikh, which is by the Red Sea. And he was hanging out there for years. He was put on, I mean,
they put him on trial, right? Or something, but they didn't.
They put him on trial. It was all sham trial. So they did charge him with one thing. So he would show up to the trial on a stretcher, wearing like fancy Ray-Bans in the courtroom. Yeah, because he's like, oh, I'm so sick. He wanted to.
They always get sick when they lose
power.
Harvey
Weinstein did that.
Harvey Weinstein, Joe Paterno, everybody does this move. You get sick.
They all do the same.
You lose your power, you get really sick.
The big three and Mubarak.
It's like the power is what was keeping their body functioning.
Yes.
You know, like,
that's right.
Like, their organs fail the second they
lose.
Don't have power anymore.
It was all the military trying to, like, you know, calm people down. So they had some trials. They're like, oh, look, we're putting Mubarak on trial. How cool is that? And he would show up and it was like some sham trial. And then like in a couple of years, they charged him with one. So he got exonerated from all the serious crimes, which is like shooting the protesters and all of this stuff. And then he got charged with one thing, which is like some bullshit money that he stole, which he obviously stole millions of dollars. But they just got him on one thing again, just to like make it look like,
oh, we did something. Look, we convicted him.
We did something. Correct.
Did he go to jail at all, or he just?
Well, he did the time that was already. Well, he was not in jail. He was in his fancy hospital, but they consider that jail time. So by the time he actually got charged, he was already finished his sentence.
He's good lawyers.
So it was all just like it was. Fucking joke.
Harvey should get Hitler's.
But actually, the rest of 2011 was a total mess because the military is now in power. There is a military council, so they were in charge, and they were. And then people started having political infighting because they were not decided whether to have presidential elections first or write a new constitution first or have a new parliament first. So it was just a lot of political bullshit.
Yeah.
But it was, in a lot of ways, on the street, it was more violent than the actual protest, even though it was not with the same number of people, but it was the military now in charge, which means every time you're on the street, it's you versus the military.
Yeah, and we skipped over it real quick, but that once Mubarak left, the military abolished the constitution and dissolved the government, right? So you had to start from zero and replace it.
Yes.
And then there was when was the first election held? It was about a year later.
It was about a year later. Yeah. That's actually I had already left.
Right.
And
they elected Sorsi, or was it how you pronounce the
Morsi was the Muslim Brotherhood guy. Yeah, yeah. I had already left at the time. But also, like, actually, when people ask me why did I leave, I didn't leave because of the initial protest. I left because of the rest of that year, because how badly the military handled it and how dangerous it became as well. I never felt, even during the initial days of the protest, I never felt unsafe. Not just because of the sheer number of people, but also because I kind of knew the limits of my opponent, which is the police. Mm. I knew these guys. My dad was a cop, and he was active during the time.
Oh, wow.
He was not in the riot force. He was just like an admin somewhere.
But he knew you were protesting? He was an active
police officer. Yeah, that's a whole other story, but he did know I was protesting, and we were kind of an he was very sympathetic. But obviously, he also had an official role to play. Right. But he understood what was happening. Like when I was talking to him one-on-one, he's like, yeah, I get it. There's a lot of corruption and things are not great. But you guys, you know, you should make sure you don't destroy your country. He's actually very wise about it. But at the same time, throughout the 2011 year, they started coming after everybody to just make sure that this doesn't happen again and that they're fully in charge.
Right.
And that's when like the individual incidents happen and they're just so ugly. Because that's what I was saying. Like when you're in a protest with the police, you kind of know their limits. They have tear gas, maybe they'll kill a couple of people. They will never go nuts. But when the military is in charge, they treat you as their actual enemy, as if you're trying to destroy the country.
They have better guns.
And they're ruthless. And they have better guns. Oh, they have tanks.
They have tanks, yeah.
Yeah, so there is one protest, there is videos of around a place called Mespiro in Cairo, where the TV tower is, like the main TV station, whatever bullshit. And there were some people protesting there for something that was not particularly political. And the military was just so fed up with everyone that they just ran people over with tanks.
Dang.
Jesus. And there was just hundreds of dead bodies on the street. And it just shows you one example of like how ruthless they can get.
And were they going around trying to find people who had been involved in the protests like six months earlier, a year earlier? Okay.
Yeah. So they did a lot of that. And I'm a nobody, but there was a lot of people who were actually famous because they were so like, you know, active on Twitter or whatever. And they were just all picked up from their houses. And some people obviously tried to play politics. So they would cozy up to the military. It's like, oh, we're the good guys. They want to play politics. They were spared for a little bit, but it's funny because now Al-Sisi came in 2013 after the military coup and he's like, hey, yeah, I remember you. Come here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, which is worse? I mean, of all these, you know, Mubarak, of the military, the Muslim Brotherhood, and now you have the current situation where they're arresting, I read they arrested thousands of activists and people who were involved.
There is about 60 to 70,000 political activists in Egypt right now, which is this statement alone being in public actually makes it like is a crime in Egypt. Me saying that in public is a crime. It's not an exaggeration. The fact that you say that on record on a public forum would, if they know about it, they would come and get you. But I don't give a shit anymore.
Just to say that protests are, mm-hmm. are even there. Protesters are
acknowledging activists. Because he would repeatedly go on record and say we don't have political activists or criminals. But then funny enough, every like when the, whenever the pressure is kind of high from the international community or whatever, he would actually release some of the political prisoners that he claims he doesn't have.
Yeah. That don't exist.
Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you leave? Yeah, like, when you decided it was time to leave, could you, was it as simple as buying a plane ticket and going?
Yeah, it was. Luckily for me, for a couple of reasons. Again, one is that I'm kind of a nobody. Like I was not, I actually, you know what kind of, what really saved me is that I was not active online. That's what saved me.
Okay.
Because people who were active online had a record
paper,
right,
yeah,
of their good activism lesson online. I was more, yeah, I was more involved in on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually kind of what saved me. So I'm just a number. They could have eventually gotten to me, but also remember at the time we didn't have such high surveillance like right now. They learned all the lessons. Let me tell you now on record, not, something like this will never happen in Egypt ever again.
Okay.
They learned so many lessons, and they learned from all of their mistakes. This country is going to, like, if it goes down, it's going to go down with these people still in power. They will never allow it to happen again. So one of the lessons we learned is that you got to put CCTV cameras everywhere. That was not a thing really back then. Now Egypt's kind of like London. It's just everywhere there are cameras. But yeah, so, but if you want to do it, you got to go on the streets. You don't do it online, which is why Twitter activism is such bullshit.
Right.
Because not just that you don't really achieve anything, but you also leave an incriminating record of your activism in a country like that. I don't believe, like, especially in Egypt or countries that are struggling with dictators, don't leave records online. Don't be stupid.
But isn't it like with Iran, it's like when videos get out, though, it does. I mean, otherwise the world wouldn't even know what's happening. So isn't there? There is.
That's true. You make a great point, which is also how the Khaled Said thing, the kid who got beaten up in the beginning, did happen. What I'm saying is that that should not be your main play field.
Yeah.
Right.
That can be a thing that is used to ignite a cause or whatever, but it can't be like, hey, I'm fighting on Twitter and saying people are using the wrong pronouns or whatever. Like, just go do something.
Right.
Yeah.
Stop yelling at people on Twitter.
Yeah. It's also, that's true. That's not real.
And,
it's not real. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna, what is it like people, like, how deflating is it for like the Arab street or whatever you want to use, word you want to use, or just people, young people in general, that all these countries, I think Tunisia is the only one that was a real success story then, right? I mean, they are a democracy now, correct? But or sort of a democracy. Democracy light.
Democracy light.
All the other countries are kind of returned to authoritarianism.
Yeah, they all regressed.
Yeah.
Correct. So they either regressed like Egypt or completely fell apart like Libya.
Right.
So
to go through them real quick, it started in Tunisia, it spread to Libya, Egypt, Yemen, Syria, Bahrain, and then there was also street demonstrations, maybe of smaller levels, Morocco, Iraq, Algeria, Lebanon, Jordan, Kuwait, Oman, and Sudan. So
correct.
The
Bahrain ones were really fucking ugly. Bahrain is a tiny country next to Saudi Arabia, and when they protested there, it's a whole religious thing of sex, like Shia and Sunni and all this stuff. Let's not get into it too much, but they suppress it so quickly and so violently. I remember it being like pretty upsetting to see action.
And so when you left, did you know I'm leaving forever? Or what was going through
your head? So the reason, again, like without going into the full story,
yeah,
the many reasons to leave. One reason I can mention was the fact that police officers in Egypt, if you're not corrupt, you actually don't get paid a lot of money, but you retire early and the retirement package is pretty nice. And my dad was not a corrupt guy. Mm-hmm. So he was just like, people retire, I think, at 55 or something. It's pretty early. I think that's cops in most countries, to be honest. But anyway, so he was like about to retire like in a year or two. So just one like of Mubarak. The reasons why, correct, yeah, exactly, just like Mubarak, good callback. So one of the reasons is that my friends who I was kind of close with and I would always go protest with started getting picked up by different security apparatus. So I knew I was kind of like next in line. And what that would do, I was not worried for myself as much as I was worried that if I get picked up, his career is fucked. He's done.
Right. He won't get the retirement package. They won't.
He won't get the retirement package. He might get fired. Something bad will happen. And I will have to live with that. I'm like, I can't do that. This is not fair. Despite the, no matter how politically different we are or whatever, I can't be the fucking idiot who fucks up his dad's career because I want to protest. It's just not right. But at the same time, because we have already lost so much, I also couldn't stay and do nothing. So I decided to leave.
Okay.
That's why I left. I actually we never had that conversation. I said that I just tired of all the fighting, which was also true. But that was the real reason. The real reason is that I just can't stay and like risk that or sit in Egypt and do nothing. So I said, oh, I'm tired of all the fighting. I'm just going to move somewhere else to, you know, until things calm down.
Yeah.
And the easiest way at the time was to teach English in China. And that's what I did.
That's the move. The
easiest way.
Yeah.
The people who end up in teaching English in China, it's a motley crew. Huh?
It's a pretty good mix.
I actually thought it would be, yeah, the good mix was in Shanghai. But when I went to Northeast China, it was pretty tame. It was just me and a bunch of white people. So I thought it would be like a refugee crisis, right? I thought there would be like a, you know, a Yemeni guy and a guy from fucking Ukraine and a guy from Georgia and stuff like that. But no, it was just me and like some
bunch Canadians. Of border Americans who couldn't figure out what to do with their lives.
That's exactly right. There was an old American guy in the university where I was teaching. All I need to know about him is that he was called Downtown David.
Oh boy.
Exactly.
Every small expat community in China had a Downtown David.
Yeah.
In America, he's just like,
and you know exactly what they're like. They've been there for way too long.
Oh, they put up numbers too.
They put up numbers.
Oh, yeah. They put up big numbers.
Numbers they could not put up in America.
I had a friend, Texas John. He was our Downtown David. And his move.
I remember Texas John, actually.
Yeah. His move was in Suzhou. He was already there. He'd been there like 2 months when I got there in 2004. And because he'd been there 2 months before me, he was the expert on town, you know? So he told me everything. And there's two bars in town, two like expat, well, not even expat bars, just two bars. One was the one we all went to, and the other one was the one we never went to. And anytime Texas John went on a first date with a girl, he took her to the one we never went to.
No.
That way, if she ever flipped out on him and wanted to come yell at him, she'd go looking for him at the other bar that we never went to.
What a genius.
He was planning ahead.
Planning. Is he still there, Texas John? What happened?
Oh yeah, he's in Shanghai.
Lifer.
Oh, yeah, Texas John is in Shanghai.
Yeah.
Turner, I know this is kind of off topic, but did you ever talk about your friend, the guy who stole a taxi in Suzhou?
Oh boy. Let's not mention him by name, but let's call him. No, Pete.
Not by name. But was he? Pistol was Pete. That story shared on the podcast before?
It was not.
A great story.
We can share it now.
Yeah. You want to share it quickly? I actually heard this from him like shortly before I moved away from Shanghai to Hong Kong.
Oh, he gave me the story.
He gave me the story. When at a jazz bar, I remember it very clearly, but I want you to tell the story because I don't actually remember the details.
All right, well, you might know a better version. You heard it firsthand at a jazz bar in Shanghai. So I'll try to do what I can do with it. But our friend, we'll call him Peter. His name's not Peter, but we'll call him Peter. He's from... Belgium or no?
Maybe we should change the country.
He's like European. Yeah.
He's like a European guy.
Yeah. Picture a European.
Roger Federer looking. We'll call him Roger Federer.
Yeah. Sure. That's good. In the movie, he'll be played by a Roger Federer like type. And anyway, so he's on his way home from a bar one night, just blasted drunk, and he's in a taxi, and he decides the taxi driver is not taking the best route to take him home. Oh,
I hate when that happens. Yeah, I used to really hate that pre-Uber.
So he decides to, I think he jumps into the front, or maybe he's either in the front seat or he jumps into the front seat, kicks the taxi driver out of his own car,
while the car's moving,
steals the taxi, and then immediately, because he's hammered, just crashes it into a wall.
I was going to say, if he goes home, they're going to arrest him because he's going to know.
He drives like 300 feet and then just straight into a wall. And then The taxi driver standing on the side of the road, like, what are you doing with my taxi? Because he sees it just swerve, and then boom, the taxi driver. The wall. And so then our friend Peter quickly thereafter gets arrested by the police.
Oh, he did get arrested.
For not only drunk driving, but stealing a car.
Well, drunk stealing is worse than regular stealing, right? Or is it not drunk as bad, stealing? Actually.
Yeah.
You don't usually get away with it. Maybe it's not as bad.
Stealing while drunk, grand theft auto while drunk, and beating up a taxi driver, you know?
Oh, because he, yeah.
So and he gets thrown in the clink, and I think he's there for, Muhammad might know better. I think he's there for like 3 to 6 months, something like that. Oh, Muhammad's frozen. We might have just lost Muhammad. This might be the end of the podcast.
He's 3 to 6 months in the clink and
3 to 6 months in jail. And our friends are trying to get him out. You know, our Chinese friends are like, oh, I'll go down and like lobby to the cops to try to get him out. But they go down to talk to the cops and they come back and they go, oh, he's guilty. I mean,
right. It's like that Mumia case of that guy who people used to rally for in Philadelphia.
Free Mumia,
And it was like so weird because it was like he was obviously guilty, but you got to just ignore that if you get into a cause. You got to just pretend, but they didn't.
Yeah. So we were all like, our friend's wrongfully imprisoned. We got to get him out. And then we find out he was very rightfully imprisoned.
Yeah. It's hard to have the passion once you realize that.
So he does 3 or 4 months. And I wish Muhammad just dropped out. I wish I could tell the second half of this because all I know is that he was in jail in Suzhou. And you don't, it's not like you get a bunk and a bed and all that stuff. It was just a room with a bench and with a lot of people all in the same room.
But is one bench per person or is one bench total?
One bench for the room.
Oh God.
For like 10 or 12 people.
For 3 months?
3 months. And the neon lights are on. Like it's like cafeteria, public school cafeteria lights. And they're on 24 hours a day.
Do they go to a cafeteria to eat? Do you know, or did he just?
You go somewhere to eat, but not. But it's not like bedtime hours. They turn the lights out or anything.
It sounds like a Turkish prison.
It's basically a Turkish prison. So you're stuck 24 hours a day in the room. I guess you get out to eat, but it's never like you just have to sleep when you can sleep, but with all these criminals around you. But I did hear that his Chinese got pretty good in there.
Your Chinese gets real damn good or whatever country you're in. If that happens, I'm just picturing Roger Federer in his tennis gear and his super looking, his hair super parted with his Rolex on, everything in the cell. And 3 months go by, he's going to look like a different person, different man.
Anyway, Cap, I guess that's the end of the podcast.
And I'll filibuster for a second in case Muhammad remembered, when I was doing my rant about all the dictators, you know, like you fall apart once you get arrested, you lose your health. Bill Cosby, I should have thrown in there because I think that's one of the great examples. He was like about to tour, I remember he was going to tour, and then he got arrested. Next thing you know, he's this old man. He's got a cane.
Yeah,
he's
falling
blind.
And now he's out. Bill
Cosby, Paterno, Mubarak. The big three.
Good thing you gave us that tidbit because Muhammad now seems to be back in the Zoom. He's coming back.
Re-entered the Zoom.
So anyway, maybe he met with our friend Peter. I guess when Peter got out of prison, he met him at a jazz bar in Shanghai.
Are you there, Muhammad?
Which, if you're thinking jazz bar, picture the Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones Temple of Doom. Remember at the beginning when they're in the jazz club in Shanghai? Kaplan, that's very much that.
Oh yeah, that's what it's okay.
Very much the scene we're cooking
with
here.
That's the scene. Okay.
All right, Muhammad is back. We'll just close this thing out here, Muhammad. Yeah. Can you hear us?
He just told the story, the first part of the story.
Yeah,
he brought us to prison.
Guys.
He brought us to the jail.
All right. So don't worry about the headphones, Muhammad. We only got a couple minutes left. But what I don't have is the second half of the prison story of our friend Peter being in jail in Shay. All I heard was that it was 24 hours, the lights were on, and you could not, there was only a bench. They all had to sleep on a bench.
Yeah, and he complained that the food was not very nice as well.
I'm real shocked. Did he write a negative Yelp review? I mean, what are you complaining
about? He also was a very European. He liked the finer things in life. He was always eating at the nicest restaurants and drinking the Bordeaux and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So it must have been
pretty impressive for an ex-con.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what happens? He gets out and he just goes back. He stays in the country, though. You guys,
he stayed.
I'm pretty sure he did. Like at the time, it was like the China days where you can just go home, change your passport, and come back, and you won't be the same person in the system. So I think he did one of those.
I believe he got kicked out of the country, but he just reapplied for a visa, came right back. I mean, he was general manager of some like big factory, big company. He was out there as like on an expat.
Yeah.
The internet was different back then. They somehow couldn't figure this out.
They couldn't figure out he was the same guy.
He changed like one letter in his name. He went from
I don't know what he's up to. I wouldn't be surprised if he's still there.
I think he's gone. I believe he's left. But to close this thing out, Muhammad, so I guess you're probably not going back anytime soon, right? It would take a change in government.
Yeah, probably. Obviously, there's a lot of details that we kind of skipped over, like the whole Muslim Brotherhood period, the whole election thing. So we can, whenever you guys feel like it, we can do another one. I would like to talk more about the current system. So it's interesting, but it's also like it's fascinating to see from an outsider perspective how much they learn and how much they change to make sure to avoid that ever happening again. So to me, that's actually because I've been abroad for so long, it's kind of fascinating to see someone learning from their mistakes. Because what a lot of people don't know is that Al-Sisi, the current president, was part of the military council that took over after Mubarak left. He was one of the guys. But he flips so much. Sometimes it's like, oh, 25th of January is the best thing that ever happened. Path to democracy. And sometimes same guy would go on TV and be like, 25th of January was the demise of Egypt. Like, which one is it?
Yeah, I read that he said that the human rights are a Western value at one point. Like, it's not a thing that...
He actually, I remember that because what he said, he was to the French president, I believe. And he said like, oh, don't ask me about human rights when I can't feed my own people. Something like that.
Right.
And the message he's saying is that, like, give me money and then talk about human rights.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the whole thing with this current system is that they are borrowing so much money. So let me just, we can close this out on this little fact, which is I left Egypt in 2012. The one US dollar was about between 5 and 6 Egyptian pounds. That's the currency in Egypt is Egyptian pounds. Today, it's around 25 officially, and you cannot get it from the bank.
Wow.
In the black market, it's about 30 pounds or if not more.
For $1.
That's in the span of 10 years. For $1.
So that's the major, well, it's expensive there. And
not so good.
So good. Have they considered Bitcoin?
Not so good. Maybe. And it's because of the current regime's political, economic. Have they thought of Bitcoin? I'm glad they didn't, because even if it was doing well, somehow they would have fucked it up.
And how's life for you in Hong Kong? The comedy clubs are open, right? You guys are performing?
We're starting to open up again, the government for the last few months has been kind of weird about live performances, even when everything else is okay. But now they finally started to relax. And we're starting to do shows again. So that's fun.
Cool.
Yeah, we're doing shows around town. Actually, we're going to start doing tours. So our buddy Andy is bringing in Russell Peters early next year. So we're going to have big shows again. And he told me about
it. Enemy of the pod, but okay.
So Andy runs the tours for Live Nation in Australia and Asia. And he's bringing in Russell Peters, who's going to start having big tours again. So life is getting back to normal.
Nice, man.
Sounds like our Roast Your Religion tour can get going. Let's talk to Live Nation about that.
Oh, yeah, let's get Live Nation.
Tour should actually be a thing, genuinely.
The put our tour together.
So your fun. God is wrong.
And then what we can do, your God is wrong tour. And then what we can do is we can encourage anyone in the crowd to shout out their religion, like roast them. And we can just start ripping on them.
We can all team up on their religion.
Yeah.
That'll bring us all together then.
Yeah, because the three religions are supposed to be the Abrahamic religions, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So even if they have differences, they're still the real ones, right?
Right. Of course.
The three real ones.
Yeah. Buddhism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Three real ones. Buddhism. Come on.
I mean, Sikhs. they're worshiping a cow. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, pigs are disgusting. We never eat that, but a cow is delicious.
All right. Oh,
yeah. And then we can all gang up on, what is it? Scientologists.
Oh my God. They're not even religion.
Come on.
Yeah. That's actually, they're the people who really control Hollywood. I'm not going to say anything about them.
What is his, their guy, like Steve or something?
Kirstie Alley. She passed away yesterday, but she was Tom Cruise.
No,
but
their main,
she's a Scientologist.
No, their God is alive, right?
Isn't L. Ron Hubbard?
Yeah, L. Ron Hubbard.
That guy.
Is he alive? He's not alive, is he?
No, he's dead. But his son, or his...
Is he?
Either his son or his nephew, L. Ron Hubbard, is a stand-up comedian who his whole act is talking about how bullshit Scientology is.
Well, you put him on the tour then.
We'll put him on the tour.
So Turner,
that'd be a baguette.
So Turner, in your religion, that means Jesus is alive and he's doing stand-up talking about how much bullshit the Christianity is.
Yeah, exactly. The Son of God.
Love it.
Son of God always closes. Right. He is not open for anyone, the Son of God. You gotta.
He's the closer.
He's got a big rider. He's a rider of that dressing room, green room. Ridiculous.
A lot of wine.
A lot of
unleavened bread.
No water. Yeah. So anyway.
All right. That's the episode.
A lot of hands.
Muhammad Magdi, thank you so much for doing it. Kaplan, that's it. What should we
do? Thanks for having me.
This was great. Thanks for doing it. And we should get lost.
Cheers, guys.
Get lost, everybody.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.